now, almost a year later, the Mew lay at anchor in Table Bay. Even through the thick oaken planking, Louisa heard the hail. "Longboat with supplies, permission to hook on." She roused herself from her long reverie and peeped through the chink in the joint of the port lid. She saw the longboat being rowed towards the ship by a mixed crew of a dozen black and white men. There was a big, broad-shouldered ruffian standing in the bows, and she started as she recognised the man at the tiller. It was the young one who had asked her name and thrown the fish to her. She had fought for possession of that precious gift, then divided it with her little blade and shared it with three other women. They were not her friends, for there were no friends aboard this ship, but early in the voyage the four had forged a pact of mutual protection for survival. They had gobbled down the fish raw, watchful of the other starving women who crowded round them, waiting for an opportunity to snatch a scrap. She remembered with longing the sweet taste of the raw fish as she watched the heavily laden longboat moor against the side of the ship. There was a hubbub of banging and shouting, the squeal of sheave blocks and more shouted orders. Through the chink she watched the baskets and boxes of fresh produce being swung on board. She could smell the fruit and the newly picked tomatoes. Saliva flooded her mouth. But she knew that most of this bounty would go to the officers' mess, and what remained to the gunroom and the common seaman's kitchen. None of it would find its way down to the prison decks. The convicts would subsist on the weevily hard biscuit and the rotten salt pork crawling with maggots. Suddenly she heard someone banging on one of the other gun ports further down the deck. And a masculine voice from outside called softly but urgently, "Louisa! Is Louisa there?" Before she could answer, some of the other women howled and shouted back, "Ja, mei dotti, I am Louisa. Do you want a taste of my honey pot?" Then there were shrieks of laughter. Louisa recognised the man's voice. She tried to shout to him above the chorus of filth and invective, but her enemy swamped her with malicious glee, and she knew he would not hear her. With rising despair, she peered through her peephole, but the view was restricted. "I am here," she shouted in Dutch. "I am Louisa." Abruptly, his face rose into her view. He must have been standing on one of the thwarts of the longboat that was moored below her gunport. "Louisa?" He put his eye to the other side of the chink, and they stared at each other from a range of a few inches. "Yes," he laughed unexpectedly. "Blue eyes, bright blue eyes. Who are you? What is your name?" On impulse she spoke in English, and he gaped at her. "You speak English?" "No, you weak wit, it was Chinese," she snapped back at him, and he laughed again. By the sound of him, he was overbearing and cocky, but he was the only friendly voice she had heard in over a year. "It's a saucy one you are. I've something else for you. Can you get this port lid open?" he asked. "Are any of the guards watching from the deck?" she asked. "They'll have me flogged if they see us talking." "No, we're hidden by the tumble home of the ship's side." "Wait," she said, and drew the blade from her pouch. Quickly she prized out the single shackle that still held the lock in place. Then she leaned back, placed both bare feet against the port lid, and pushed with all her might. The hinges creaked, then gave a few inches. She saw his fingers at the edge, and he helped to pull it open a little wider. Then he thrust a small canvas bag through the opening. "There's a letter for you," he whispered, his face close to hers. "Read it." And then he was gone. "Wait," she pleaded, and his face appeared in the opening again. "You did not tell me. What is your name?" "Jim. Jim Courtney." "Thank you, Jim Courtney," she said, and let the port lid thump shut. The three women crowded round her in a tight circle of protection as she opened the bag. Quickly they divided up the dried meat and the packets of hard biscuit, and gnawed at the unappetizing fare with desperate hunger. When she found the comb, tears came to Louisa's eyes. It was carved from dappled, honey-coloured tortoiseshell. She stroked it through her hair, and it glided smoothly, not pulling painfully like the ugly hand-whittled thing she'd been reduced to. Then she found the file and the knife wrapped together in a scrap of canvas. The knife was horn-handled, and the blade, when she tested it on her thumb, was keen, a fine weapon. The sturdy little file had three cutting edges. She felt a lift of hope, the first in all those long months. She looked down at the irons on her ankles. The skin beneath the cruel bonds were calloused. Knife and file were invaluable gifts, but it was the comb that touched her deepest. It was an affirmation that he had seen her as a woman, not as jail dregs from the slums and the gutter. She rummaged in the bottom of the bag for the letter he had promised. It was a single sheet of cheap paper folded cunningly to form its own envelope. It was addressed to Louisa, in a bold but fair hand. She unfolded it, careful not to tear it. It was in poorly spelt Dutch, but she was able to make out the gist of it. "Use the file on your chains. I'll have a boat under the stern tomorrow night. When you hear the ship's bell strike two bells in the middle watch, jump. I will hear the splash. Have courage." Her pulse raced. At once she knew that the chances of success were negligible. 100 things could go wrong, not least a musket ball or a shark. What matters was that she had found a friend and with it new hope of salvation, no matter how remote. She tore the note into shreds and dropped them into the reeking latrine bucket. None of the guards would try to retrieve it from there. Then she crept back under the cannon, into the darkness that was her only privacy, and sat with her legs folded under her so she could easily reach the links of her leg irons. With the first stroke of the little file, she cut a shallow but bright notch, and a few grains of iron filtered down to the deck. The shackles had been forged from untempered steel of poor quality, but it would take time and a heartbreaking perseverance to cut through a single link. "I have a day and a night. Until two bells in the middle watch tomorrow night," she encouraged herself and laid the file into the notch she had already cut. At the next stroke, more iron filings dusted the deck.